Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle.
And I'm Peter Sagal. Love is hard. Anybody who's been around knows that. It's hard to find someone who's truly your mate with the same perspective, the same needs, the same place in their lives. And then you still have to put in the work to be open, sensitive, and patient. Or if that's too tough, you can just make somebody up. We'll ask who took the easy route, plus Carl Castle talks about meeting Susan Stamberg for the first time.
She was the most beautiful girl I ever met.
We'll ask who really was so lovely on our quiz. It comes up right after this hour's news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Nora Rahm. President Obama has just taken the oath of office for his second term. It was administered at a small ceremony at the White House a few minutes ago. The Constitution requires the oath be taken on January 20th, since today is Sunday. The president will repeat it tomorrow at a public ceremony outside the west front of the Capitol, overlooking the National Mall. Hundreds of thousands of people are expected to attend. Senior White House advisor David Plouffe says in the second term, the president will escalate his efforts to work with Republicans.
There's a huge consensus in the country about how we ought to approach the deficit economy, issues like immigration and gun safety. And I don't think he's going to be very frustrated if Washington is completely divorced from the reality in the country. So he's going to seek common ground. He's going to find every way he can to compromise.
Plouffe was interviewed this morning on ABC's This Week. The Algerian government is warning the death toll following the siege at a gas plant in the Sahara Desert will rise. More bodies were found today. NPR's Philip Rees reports, right now, the official death toll still stands at least 23 hostages killed and 32 Islamist militants dead.
Algeria's state news agency says the country's communications minister has stated the death toll will go up as details emerge. Among the dead are 7 hostages, reportedly killed by the militants during a final assault launched yesterday by Algerian special forces. According to Algerian officials, more than 100 foreigners and nearly 700 Algerians were freed during the 4-day crisis. Britain has confirmed 3 of its nationals are dead, 3 others are believed dead. Prime Minister David Cameron today acknowledged that people will question Algeria's tactics, but added,
when you're dealing with a terrorist incident on this scale, with up to 30 terrorists, it is extremely difficult to respond and to get this right in every respect.
Cameron said responsibility for what he called a vicious and cowardly attack lies with the terrorists who carried it out. Philip Reeves, NPR News, London.
A bomb exploded in a shopping center near Athens today, wounding 2 security guards and damaging stores. Joanna Kakissis reports from Athens. The explosion follows several arson attacks on journalists.
The shops were closed at the mall, but about 200 people were at its cafes, restaurants, and movie theaters. Police evacuated them after receiving a tip that a bomb was inside. The bomb was in a trash bin. Some media commentators suggested that the mall may have been targeted because a billionaire with political connections is accused of building it illegally. Earlier this month, an anarchist group calling itself Militant Minority Lovers of Lawlessness claimed responsibility for similar bombings outside the homes of 5 journalists. The group said the journalists were giving biased views of the economic crisis by promoting austerity, oligarchs, and capitalism. For NPR News, I'm Joanna Kakissis in Athens.
This is NPR News from Washington. Authorities in Beijing are planning new emergency measures to deal with pollution. Heavy smog has blanketed the Chinese capital for days, with pollution at hazardous levels again this weekend. Officials say they may close factories temporarily, cut back on coal burning, and take some vehicles off the road. Coal production and consumption have tripled since 2000, and coal-fired power stations remain in operation in the heart of the city's business district. Syria's foreign minister is calling for talks with opposition groups. NPR's Susanna George reports the appeal came during a live interview with Syrian state television.
Waleed Mualim invited what he called nationalistic opposition to join a new cabinet in the Syrian government, just as long as they reject foreign intervention. He also said that any discussion of the future of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad was unacceptable. But these two conditions are almost non-starters. The main Syrian rebel group, the Syrian Coalition for Revolutionary and Opposition Forces, has called for foreign intervention in the past, and Assad's removal from power is a key demand of all rebel groups. Just last week, the man tasked with brokering a peace deal in Syria, United Nations and Arab League envoy Lakhdar Brahimi, said Assad should not be part of a transitional government. Susanna George, NPR News, Beirut.
By the end of the day, we should know which teams are going to the Super Bowl. The Baltimore Ravens will play the New England Patriots in Massachusetts for the AFC Championship. Later, the Atlanta Falcons will host the San Francisco 49ers to determine the NFC Championship. The winners of those two games will meet in New Orleans on February 3rd for the Super Bowl. I'm Nora Rahm, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Esurance, an Allstate company, born online and offering tools and resources for drivers to make decisions about their car insurance at esurance.com.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much.
We have a great show for you today. Later on, we've got Melinda Gates joining us talking about... Talking about the good work she does with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Now, right out front, we know the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation sponsors NPR, and this show specifically, but that had nothing to do with why she's on the show. No, she's here because there is nothing more hilarious than her foundation's work to fight poverty and disease worldwide. Oh, and by the way, a little planning note for you. Mark your calendar. Next week, we will be having an uproarious chat with Lumber Liquidators. But no charge for your call. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Angie calling from Santa Barbara, California.
Hey, how are things in beautiful Santa Barbara?
It's gorgeous here.
It really is. It's almost unfair how gorgeous it is. I've always thought of Santa Barbara that Santa Barbara is what everybody thinks L.A. is supposed to be, but it isn't. Santa Barbara is.
Yeah, I mean, it's rough.
Well, welcome to the show, Angie. Let me introduce you to our panel today. First up, it's one of the women behind the Washington Post's reliable source column. It's Roxanne Roberts.
Hi, Roxanne.
Next, a writer, performer, and occasional beaver mascot on Comedy Central's The Colbert Report, Mr. Peter Gross.
Hi.
And finally, it's a correspondent for CBS Sunday Morning and the host of My Grandmother's Ravioli, airing Wednesdays on the Cooking Channel, Mr. Mo Rocca is here. Well, Angie, you're going to play Who's Carl? This time, of course, Carl Castle is going to read you three quotations in the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain two of them, you'll win our prize, Carl's voice in your home answering machine. Are you ready to go?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Your first quote is from Oprah Winfrey. She was talking about the time she and Lance Armstrong got together in a hotel room in Texas.
He was thoughtful. He was serious. He certainly had prepared himself for this moment. I would say he met the moment. At the end of it, we both were pretty exhausted.
So, what were they doing, Oprah and Lance, that was so draining?
Was that the thing with him confessing to Oprah about the doping?
Yes, it was. Very good. He finally came clean.
No one knows exactly what went on in that room with Oprah and Lance Armstrong, but we do know that she biked all the way back to L.A. after the interview.
Very,
very quickly.
Yes.
He gave her like 6 pints of his blood.
Yeah.
Maybe he just bit her neck.
That's all you did.
That would do it.
Until now, Lance Armstrong has viciously attacked anyone who accused him of doping. It's such a reflex with him, he responded to Oprah's first question by punching her. But by the end, he came clean. He confessed to injecting pretty much the contents of an entire Walgreens into his own posterior.
Don't you think coming clean is a little bit of an oxymoron?
Yeah, for him. Why did he choose to make his confession on the Oprah network?
Because Oprah can absolve you of your sins. No, I mean,
she has that power. Like,
she's
like the medieval church?
Yeah.
She can give
She's Popra.
Or maybe...
She's Popra. Yes.
Yeah.
I thought it was because no one would be watching.
Yes, well, there's that.
He's going to give like 7 amazing interviews in a row, and everyone's going to be like, he's a 7-time champion of apologizing.
I know.
He does this better than anybody.
So things are not going well for Lance Armstrong. This week, the IOC asked him to give back his bronze medal from the 2000 Summer Olympics. That's in addition to the 7 Tour de France wins he's already given up.
He has to give back all of his yellow shirts.
Yes.
Any shirt of his that's yellow.
Also, he had to give back his mansion, his jet, and his exciting romantic relationships with singer Sheryl Crow and various models. From now on, retroactively, he spent the years from 2002 to 2010 cruising Craigslist personal ads and hitting on cute baristas to no effect at all.
Yeah, he was just like a bike messenger.
Yeah.
Who dated baristas. Here comes that bike weirdo. Hey, my name's Lance, guys. My band's playing tonight. You guys want to come on over? I liked you better when you were doping, Armstrong.
All right, very good. Here is your next quote.
She was the most beautiful girl I ever met.
That was somebody talking about his beautiful girlfriend who tragically died of either cancer or a car accident or both. Except it turns out she didn't exist. Who was it?
Oh, I want to say Teo.
Yeah, Teo. Manti Te'o is his name, the Notre Dame football player. Very good. As everybody knows, as much as we love sports, Americans don't care about athletes, not really, unless they're triumphing over the loss of something, a wife, a parent, a testicle. And that may explain why Notre Dame star linebacker Manti Te'o told everyone the heartbreaking story of his gorgeous girlfriend, Lene Kekua, and how she died of cancer and a car crash right in the middle of their season. But in what turns out to be the best news for nerds ever, sometimes even star football players make up their girlfriends. Ms. Kekua had everything a guy could want except an actual existence. After Deadspin broke the story, Te'o said he was the victim of a terrible hoax. He should have suspected something, he said, when his girlfriend, who he now says he never actually met, told him she was dying, but he shouldn't visit her ever because she was washing her hair every minute of every day.
Listen, no, stop it. Stop. The guy... I'm convinced that he's a victim.
You are?
Yeah, my girlfriend Siri and I were talking about this. We really... No, and Siri's aunt, Betty Crocker, agrees with us. And this is terrible.
Now, a lot of people are saying that, you know, whatever this means for what happened this season... and who he was fooling or whether he was fooled. This guy was supposed to go into the NFL, right, and make $1 million. I mean, is this going to affect his draft chances? And people are saying, no, the NFL has standards. They don't care if your girlfriend is imaginary as long as you cheat on her. That's the standard.
Well, he should do very well in fantasy football, right?
Yes, exactly.
We should look at the bright side in all of this. Somebody isn't dead.
That's true.
That is true.
It's like you just saved a life, really.
I mean, it's kind of nice.
That's what he should say. I saved an innocent girl's life today. And why is everybody worried about whether I did or didn't make her up?
All right, Angie, your last quote is somebody finally, after 7 years of silence and anticipation, saying something at his workplace. And the immortal words were...
Well, he did not...
So who broke the long silence with those four words? He was sitting there with eight other people who all looked at him with surprise, we can only assume.
Is this another sports question?
Oh, no.
It's a different kind of uniform.
Well, maybe you didn't hear about this. You've already won, I'll tell you. It was Clarence Thomas.
Oh, the Supreme Court.
Yeah, it's been 7 years since Clarence Thomas last spoke during Supreme Court oral arguments. This week, he finally said something. It was, as you heard Carl recreate, well, he did not. What did he mean? So we wanted to get some perspective on this landmark day in the Supreme Court. So joining us now is NPR's legal affairs correspondent, Nina Totenberg. Nina, great to talk to you again.
My pleasure.
So Nina, it must have been so exciting for you to finally hear Clarence Thomas speak from the bench. What was it like in the room?
I wasn't there.
You weren't there?
No, it's even worse than that. I was not only not there, I wasn't paying any attention whatsoever. My husband was having a hip replacement. I'm at the hospital with him while he's in surgery, and my cell phone goes off, and it says, Clarence Thomas spoke in oral argument, and I'm not there. He waited 7 years to do this to me?
Wow. Mm-hmm. The worst thing about that for me, Nina, that you weren't there, is that this robbed you of your first chance, really, in, I guess since 2006, to do your Clarence Thomas impersonation on one of your regular, you know, reports.
This is true. I would have then had to have said, what are those words?
I want to set it up for you because I want you to do it on our show since you can't do it on NPR News.
He did not. Okay. Justice Thomas. Well, he did not.
There we go, ladies and gentlemen. Nina Totenberg.
It would have been nice if he's going to speak this infrequently to add a little sass and say maybe, oh, no, he didn't.
Nina Totenberg, the immortal and legendary legal affairs correspondent. Thank you so much.
We hope your husband feels better.
Yeah, give our best to your husband. I hope he recovers soon.
I should have let him ring the bell that I bought for him today. I went to the hardware store and bought him a bell so he can ring it upstairs and call me. Hey, David! Ring the bell! Oh, we moved you. I forgot. You don't have it.
Wait a minute. You moved him someplace and forgot where he was?
I got him in the chair.
Guys, whoever this is, I'm being tortured. I'm that guy that crashes up. Please help me.
Okay, guys.
Bye-bye, Nina. Nice to talk to you.
Bye.
She never laughs like that in All Things Considered. Carl, how did Angie do in our quiz?
Angie, you were a winner. You had two correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on your voicemail or home answering machine.
Awesome.
Yay. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Carbonite, providing automatic cloud backup to keep photos, music, and other files safe from computer mishaps. Details at carbonite.com. The National Association of Realtors, an advocate for home ownership. More at houselogic.com/homeownership. And Ancestry.com, providing online genealogy tools for solving the puzzles of family history. Learn more at tryancestry.com. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Roxanne Roberts, Mo Rocca, and Peter Gross. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Now it is time. I know you've been waiting for it, the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our games on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Darren Scott from Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Hey, how are things in Baton Rouge?
Cold.
What do you do there?
I'm a student at LSU.
All right, of course. And what are you studying?
Construction management.
Construction management.
Yeah.
That's so wise.
Perhaps you've heard of lumber liquidators.
Darren, it's nice to have you with us. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is the topic?
Meet Wayne Dobson.
Wayne Dobson is a 59-year-old retiree from Las Vegas, Nevada. This week he found himself all over the news. Our panelists are each going to tell you why, but only one of them is telling you the truth. Guess that true reason, you'll win Carl's voice on your home voicemail. Ready to go?
Sure.
Let's hear your first story about Wayne Dobson from Peter Gross.
Wayne Dobson knew two things. He was hungry, and he had some time on his hands. So he went to the 24-hour all-you-can-eat buffet at Caesar's Palace at 8 a.m. Wednesday morning, sat down, and did not leave until 11 p.m. Saturday night. 4 whole days of eating. Dobson's modus operandi was this. He ate a meal, then read, watched movies on his iPad, and took bathroom breaks until he got hungry, at which point he'd get up and eat again. I guess no one noticed I was here, a surprised Dobson said. He didn't quite realize that bleary-eyed casino workers on 14-hour shifts aren't a particularly observant bunch. Anyway, Wayne's exploits went viral, and as word spread through social media, people began flying in from all over the world to try Dobsoning at a local Vegas buffet. Teenagers from Germany, retirees from Argentina, and Overeaters Anonymous Club from Norway. Wayne Dobson has been officially banned from every buffet in town, and his sister Marcia isn't surprised. Whenever Wayne comes to visit for the weekend, he ends up leaving on Tuesday, Marcia said. I think overstaying his welcome is something he's really good at.
Wayne Dobson, hero to the buffet customers in Vegas. Your next story of the day in the life of Mr. Wayne Dobson comes from Roxanne Roberts.
So there's a glitch in the tracking software for lost or stolen cell phones that direct owners to one address, the home of Wayne Dobson in Las Vegas. Furious people have been showing up at his door day and night, using their find-a-phone apps to demand he return their stolen property. The problem is, the software is malfunctioning. Things got so bad that Dobson confronted two trespassers on his lawn at 4 a.m., screaming, "Who are you?" It was the police, mistakenly sent to his house after a woman used her cell to call 911 during a fight with her boyfriend. Quote, "It's very difficult to say, I don't have your phone, in any other way than, I don't have your phone."
Hundreds of cell phones telling their users that they were at Wayne Dobson's house when they weren't. And finally, your last chapter in the story of Wayne Dobson comes from Mo Rocca.
For years, Wayne Dobson had been obsessed with actress Melina Kanakaridis, the ravishing ringlet-haired star of CSI New York with the unmistakably Greek name. Alas, his cards and letters went unanswered. Dobson even drove from his Vegas home to Kanakaridis' L.A. home with a tray of homemade baklava, but got the polite brush-off from her assistant. And so he boarded a plane for London. Why? The British Museum has long held one of Greece's greatest ancient treasures, the Elgin Marbles, a priceless sack of multicolored glass marbles that, according to mythology, Zeus played with as a boy at recess. To impress Kanakaridis, Dobson would return them to Greece. While a guard was not looking, Dobson grabbed the Elgin marbles and put them down the front of his pants and began to move toward the museum's exit. Once it was discovered the marbles were missing, chaos ensued, all according to plan, except that Dobson forgot to wear briefs. He was wearing boxers, and so he had to use his hand cupped over his front to prevent the marbles from dropping down his pant leg. He was detained for lewd behavior, and the marbles were recovered and steam cleaned.
Yeah.
Let me review your choices. So there is a guy named Wayne Dobson. He really does exist. He lives in Las Vegas. This week he got in the news because of one of three things. Was it from Peter Gross? He became famous for living perhaps an entire weekend in a buffet in Vegas and inspiring a movement to do the same. From Roxanne Roberts, for some reason all the cell phones in the area, all the lost cell phones, started telling their owners that that's where they were at his house when they really weren't. Or from Mo Rocca, because of his crush on a Greek actress, he flew to Britain and tried to steal the Elgin marbles by stuffing them down his pants.
Well, as much as I'd like to say it's somebody grabbing their marbles in their crotch, I'm going to have to go with the cell phone story.
Really?
Yeah.
Your choice then is Roxanne's story about the cell phone malfunction that made him the worst cell phone thief in Las Vegas. Well, we spoke to someone familiar with the true story about Mr. Wayne Dobson.
He's had to post a sign outside of his door saying that he doesn't have any lost cell phones.
That was Lawrence Maurer. He's the reporter for the Las Vegas Review-Journal who broke the story of Wayne Dobson and his strange cell phone curse. We don't know why the cell phones think they're at his house. Congratulations, Darren. You got it right. Well done. You're the point for Roxanne. You've won our prize. Carl Castle will record the greeting on your home voicemail. Well done, sir.
Thanks.
And now the game where we ask people who do important things to do something trivial. It's called Not My Job. Back in the early 1990s, Melinda French was a rising star at a software company when the boss asked her out on a date. That was complicated. He was the boss, and frankly, he was kind of a nerd. But they fell in love, they got married, and decided to raise a family, and eventually retire from the business, and in their spare time give away more money to charity than anyone else in the history of the world. Melinda Gates is the co-chair of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. We are delighted to have her join us now. Melinda Gates, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Am I right in that? I have read this. Is it true that your foundation is, in fact, the largest charitable organization ever?
That is true, and it's because of both our wealth that's in the foundation and also our friend Warren Buffett's wealth is in the foundation.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about this because you do all this work all around the world, but it must be weird, though, to have this wealthy foundation that's involved in this work, because when I get up in the morning and I read about death, disease, privation, poverty, I go, well, it's not my problem. But you could actually fix it.
Well, some of the diseases we do feel that we can make a huge difference in. Something like malaria, we feel like the funding that we've given and the scientists we've been able to garner in the field that hopefully in our lifetimes will actually eradicate malaria off the face of the planet.
I have a bike that I hope to fix. Yeah. It's not working. So I hope to eradicate the non-working bike.
Wasn't there an event I remember reading about a few years ago in which your husband and partner in this venture, Bill Gates, was at some event and talking about your malaria eradication, and he surprised the room by releasing a bunch of mosquitoes into the room to make some sort of point? Am I making this up, or did this happen?
He did. No, and all the people in the front row all kind of cringed and got down. They wanted to climb under their seats. Luckily, the mosquitoes themselves didn't actually have malaria in the end.
Luckily or intentionally?
Was that like some sort of oversight?
Well, one of the things, the other things that every now and then, you know, Bill likes to put his scientific brain against things, and so one of the other ideas he's got with some friends that may actually be promising is zapping the wings off of mosquitoes. Hard to imagine in Africa, though.
Wait a minute, zapping them off?
Well, yeah, it's not going to be a very good century to be a mosquito, because between that or chopping their legs off when they land on a mosquito net, we don't think they're going to be long for this world, this particular flavor of mosquitoes.
All right, what do you do if a bunch of mosquitoes in suits come to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and go, look, we've got this problem, we'd like your help. These people keep trying to cut off our wings.
And we might zap them.
Really?
Wait, I want to back up here. You know, the foundation does so many important things for really serious and global issues. Is there something that was kind of frivolous, but it was just so cool you couldn't resist and that you got involved in?
Well, it is interesting. I mean, people come up with ideas that sound like completely wacky when it's first presented, but there's a genesis of an idea. So another thing somebody came up with in malaria that actually had a good idea is at first they wanted us to collect all these sweaty and worn socks to create a mosquito repellent. Well, it turns out the idea of having that human scent on something is a good idea. We're just not going to collect the sweaty socks.
Wait a minute. Oh, somebody said collect sweaty socks, and then the idea is like you put the sweaty socks over there in that corner of the room, and the mosquitoes all go over there because it smells like a person.
They were basically asking the foundation to come clean up their house.
Yeah.
And they probably wanted an allowance to be paid for that, too.
Yeah, I understand.
I'm curious. If you and I went to lunch and then the waiter brought the check, well, first of all, would you pay it, or?
I think chances are if he'd probably bring it to me rather than you.
Really?
Okay, well, what if, like, I'm curious, like, if I said, like, no, I'm going to pick up the check. Let me take it. Would you just go, oh, God, give me a break?
Can I ask a totally personal question? Okay, so.
You can ask.
Try to stop her, Melinda.
Maybe. No, I'm going to ask. So you've got, I think, 2-3 kids, is that right? I
want to
know. So what are you going to tell them about workplace romances?
Well, I think they can answer that for themselves. It worked out for us. I'm not sure it would work in this day and age, but it certainly did for us.
Well, the story is, since Roxanne has broached this topic, the story is that you were working at Microsoft. It was the early 90s. And Bill Gates, who, of course, is famously is the founder and CEO at the time of Microsoft, asked you out in a parking lot?
He did. The first time he asked me out, he said, could you go out 2 weeks from this coming Saturday night? And I said, well, that's not exactly spontaneous enough for me. Why don't you call me closer to the date?
What did you think about that? I mean,
I was like, wow, who knows their calendar? 2 weeks from Saturday night. It's not a day.
Did the phrase, what a dork, cross your mind?
Well, actually, one thing is it does show his humor, which is a couple hours later, he called me and he said, how about tonight?
Oh, that's nice.
There you go.
Well, the only problem with that was that he said, right after that, he said, but I do have this user group thing I have to go to in another dinner, so how about sometime later tonight? I'm like, a user group thing? What is that?
That's when you said, what a dork.
So he had to go, user group is like people who were using Microsoft products.
Exactly. He had to go demonstrate a product to them that night.
Was it, I mean, I imagine it was awkward. He was your boss. He was the head of the company you were working at, and you were an accomplished professional. Did you think about, well, what's this going to do to my career? And, I mean, was that a concern?
Put it this way. When I called my mom, she didn't think it was a very good idea.
Yeah. I imagine you sitting there, like, doing one of those classic pro and con things, like, con, he's my boss. Pro, he's a billionaire. Con.
Well, I didn't exactly think we were going to get married, so I thought going out with him once wasn't going to hurt anything.
Really?
And who picked up the check?
Definitely him.
Well, Melinda Gates, we are delighted to have you with us, and we've asked you here to play a game we're calling...
But I meant well, Your Majesty.
We understand, as from talking to you, that it's hard to give away money. You have to be careful and thoughtful, do your research. You know what's harder? Giving gifts to the Queen of England. We're going to ask you 3 questions about gifts given to Queen Elizabeth II. To answer 2 of those questions correctly, you'll win our prize, one of our listeners. Carl, who is Melinda Gates playing for?
Melinda is playing for Sebastian Nilsson of San Francisco.
Ready to play?
Sure.
All right. Now, protocol dictates that a visiting head of state is supposed to give something to the Queen that represents their culture, local craft maybe. So what did French President Georges Pompidou give the Queen, or more specifically give to her consort, the Duke of Edinburgh, when he made a state visit in 1972? Was it A, did he give the Duke of Edinburgh a mistress, B, a greeting card with $5 in it, or C, a 6-foot-long cooler for wine in the shape of a grasshopper?
I'm going to have to go with A.
You're going to have to go with A.
Mistress.
That, in order... I'm sorry.
Oh, gosh.
That your proposition is that in order to represent French culture, craft, the President of France, Georges Pompidou, in 1972, presented to the Duke of Edinburgh, Queen Elizabeth's consort and husband, a mistress.
I'm not going to editorialize on my answer. It's got to be A.
No, I'm sorry. In fact, the answer was C, a 6-foot-long cooler for wine in the shape of a grasshopper.
Wow.
I just have to say that you instantly just became my favorite person ever. So thank you for that. You still have two more chances. Once South African President Jacob Zuma thought he came up with the perfect gift for the Queen, a hand-carved chess set with the pieces modeled after two different tribes of African warriors. But he discovered a problem when what happened? A, the Queen looked at the figures and said, "Oh my, I can see their most private parts." B, he walked past, Zuma did, an identical chess set given to the Queen by Nelson Mandela. Or C, the Duke of Edinburgh muttered, quote, "Chess is a game for wankers."
Oh, I'm going to go with B on this one.
An identical chess set given to the Queen by Nelson Mandela?
Mm-hmm.
You're right. Yes, indeed. It's hard to come up with an original idea these days. All right, last question. If you get this, you win. The Queen gets all kinds of gifts from all kinds of people. The official list of royal gifts includes which of these? A black velvet painting of Elvis as Henry VIII. B, a dozen cans of tuna. Or C, a 7-foot-high marijuana plant.
I'm going to have to go with B again.
A dozen cans of tuna?
Yes.
You're right, yes! The royal family's website, which lists this gift, does not say who gave her the tuna or why. Perhaps she was hungry. Carl, how did Melinda Gates do on our show?
Melinda had two correct answers, Peter, and that's good enough to win for Sebastian Nilsson. Congratulations.
Well done. Congratulations, Melinda. Can I ask, is there another big initiative coming up for the foundation?
The really big things we've done this year is family planning, making sure that women all over the world get access to contraceptives.
I understand that birth control has become a personal cause of yours. Is that true?
That's absolutely true.
And how many kids do you have?
3.
Yeah, I could really see that inspiration.
Well, in fact, I opened my talk about family planning for the year to kick this off by saying, you know, 1 billion couples a year have sex, and guess what? One of them's me.
Whoa! I am so blushing now. Melinda Gates is the co-chair of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, where she focuses on family planning, agriculture, nutrition, and U.S. education. Melinda Gates, thank you so much for joining us. Very much appreciated. You're great to talk to. In just a minute, Carl goes goo-goo for goo-goosha in the Listener Limerick Challenge. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to join us on air. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Lumber Liquidators, offering a variety of sustainably harvested flooring, including pre-finished and stained at 1-800-HARDWOOD. Progressive Insurance, with insurance for cars, boats, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. And Ally Bank, who believes in getting more from your news and your money, offering money market accounts. Learn more at allybank.com. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Mo Rocca, Peter Gross, and Roxanne Roberts. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. In just a minute, Carl finally admits that his girlfriend, Raimia Limrekua, was in fact a hoax. But we'll make it up to you with a listener limerick challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Mo, a young couple who met on Facebook, fell in love and got married, are divorcing after they each discovered that what was just not enough to base a marriage on.
What did they find? Did they find via Facebook that they shared something?
Yeah, well, it was actually something that was very easy for them to search for on Facebook.
They had the same name.
They had exactly the same name.
And then they did the genealogy thing and found out they were brother and sister.
No. 3 years ago...
they invited one set of parents to the wedding. Oh, my God! What's going on?
Cheaper wedding.
Now, 3 years ago, Kelly Hildebrandt did what any single person does to find a date. She searched for her own name on Facebook. And so Kelly Katrina Hildebrandt met Kelly Carl Hildebrandt. They talked, they fell in love, they got married. It was magical, and just like Brangelina or Bennifer, they were known by their celebrity couple name, Kelly Hildebrandt. They even thought of having children. If it was a boy, they'd name him Kelly. If it was a girl, they'd name her Kelly. Basically, anything that emerged from her body, they'd call Kelly.
They'd only wear Kelly Green. Yes. Gosh, they were... Wow, that's freaky. I thought it was just going to be the same last name.
No, the same name. They thought this was adorable.
See, this is the problem with unisex names.
And would her name then, to keep her own identity, be Kelly Hildebrandt Hildebrandt?
Well, they could... Well, you know, this is an enlightened age. They would both change her last name.
Oh, so Kelly
they would
Hildebrandt,
both be Hildebrandt Hildebrandt.
Oh, God, the children would then be Kelly Hildebrandt 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 Jr.
Yeah, combining them. Yeah. If you use the mother's name as the middle name,
Kelly
Hildebrandt
Hildebrandt
Hildebrandt Hildebrandt.
This
Hildebrandt.
Is where you need exponents. Exactly. That's why. Exponents.
Kelly Hildebrandt to the fourth. Yeah.
Kelly two squared Hildebrandt. Hildebrandt squared. Yeah. Exactly.
So have you guys ever done this? Have you ever Googled your own? I mean, or Facebook searched on Facebook for anybody of your own name?
Not on Facebook. I've done it. There's like an old German aviation expert named Peter Gross.
Yeah.
And sometimes I got a message on Facebook once that was like, "Are you this Peter Gross? Are you the German aviation expert? You mean the 95-year-old guy who died like 7 years ago? I am."
Peter, do not be alarmed, but officials at Chicago O'Hare Airport insist there's nothing suspicious or weird about the container they x-rayed as it went through customs, and they discovered what?
Rick Bayless. human body part of some kind?
Yes.
Let's start at the top. A head?
Yes. 18 human heads.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So 18 human. So just like a nice small piece of luggage.
Yeah. Now, before anybody panics, these were medical specimens. Either that or 18 people signed up for the world's worst discount vacation package.
Now, those heads may not have been severed. They may have just fallen off without being severed.
That's true.
You know, like hair falls out.
It's true.
Sometimes heads fall out.
It's extreme male pattern baldness.
Yeah.
Were they all... I'm assuming they were all in individual hat boxes.
One would hope. Maybe they signed up for tours. Like, you all get to go to Chicago for $50 a head. People are like... Sounds good.
Wait, can you go back a little bit? I'm feeling a little confused about this story. Somebody was going to the airport with a bunch of heads.
No, what happened was, freight comes through customs when it comes off an international flight. These heads were coming from Italy to apparently some sort of medical facility.
You know how stylish.
I thought it was
they probably had beautiful hair.
Oh, absolutely.
I thought someone was like checking in and was like putting their stuff through.
Through the scanner.
It's awful sometimes. No,
shoes and your laptops and your heads in different boxes.
Yeah. Each head has to go in its own tray, please. Don't you hate that? When you're in line behind somebody, you're late for your flight, and they're unpacking all their human heads one by one.
There should be a lane that's just the human head lane.
And if any of them had earrings, that was going to be a problem,
I know.
Does this happen a lot?
Yeah, apparently heads are like standard medical stuff because they're used for the practice of dentistry. They practice, dental surgeons practice on heads. They're used for dissection, medical students, juggling. They're very good. They're very good.
You should be able to take them on board and put them in the overhead.
You'd think.
Ha 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 ha!
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or you can click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago. And check out the latest How to Do Everything podcast this week. Ian and Mike tell you how a vacuum cleaner can revolutionize the way you do your hair. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hey, it's Ashu Tandon.
Hey, Ashu Tandon, you said?
Yep.
That's great. Where are you calling from?
From Cincinnati.
What do you do there?
I'm a pediatric cardiology fellow.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Was that a boo or
no,
an impressed
no, it's like, no, it's like so serious.
Oh, okay. Like, I see. Yeah.
But I felt like he lightened it up by using the word fellow instead of surgeon.
You mean I'm a fellow who does pediatric cardiology?
That's what I assume.
Yeah.
So, you know, one thing that makes it a little lighter is when you're dealing with the kids, you can, like, make faces at them or poke them or make fun of them. And, you know, if it was an adult, they'd get all weirded out by that. But the kids don't make it.
So you got into it to poke kids.
Yeah.
Just stick your finger in their belly and stuff.
Yeah. Well, welcome to the show, Ashu. You are going to play our listener limerick challenge. Carl Castle will read for you three news-related limericks. Of course, the last word he will not say. That will be up to you. Do that two times out of three, and you'll win. Ready to play?
Yep.
Here we go. Here's your first limerick.
As a city bird, I can't show doubt, so I might come across as a lout. But traffic is loud, and so are the crowds, so I can't just chirp. I must
shout.
Yes. This week, very good shout. Researchers at Germany's Max Planck Institute for Ornithology revealed that city birds, much like their human counterparts, are louder and shriller than their country cousins. Mm-hmm. That's in order to be heard over the sound of traffic. It's like, hey, I'm flapping here, I'm flapping here. The worst is the cab driver birds in the city. You cut them off in traffic, they flip you the human. All right, very good. Here is your next limerick.
As they fall in my scotch with a plunk, my ice cubes will watch what I've sunk. They measure the tip of sip after sip. They warn me when I'm getting
drunk.
Yes! Drunk. Very good. Smart cubes are what they're called. Smart cubes are high-tech fake ice cubes you put in your cocktail, and they let you know when it's time to stop drinking and start throwing up. They count your sips by measuring the tilting motion of your glass, right? If you exceed the limit, the ice cubes start to blink orange. If you ignore that, they turn red. You'll know you're really drunk when your ice cubes are telling you to stop drinking and you have not purchased or used smart cubes.
Now what about straws, smart cubes? What's your answer for that?
Is that like a question on the Alcoholics Anonymous questionnaire when you know you've hit bottom? Do you lie to your ice cubes about how much you're drinking? That's, you know you've hit bottom. Yeah, when you're telling your ice cubes, it's soda, all right?
What do you know? You're not my dad.
Here is your last limerick, Ashu.
Where I go, my dad's terror is not far. I can cruise in a commandeered cop car. I climb Uzbek charts because my dad rules these parts. I'm a dictator's daughter and
pop star.
Yes, pop star. Gulnara Karimova, the daughter of the brutal dictator of Uzbekistan, is a typical dictator's daughter. She amassed a huge fortune via corruption, intimidation, and terror. Except what she really wants to be is a pop star. She's released a bunch of songs and videos under the name Gugusha. Imagine Lady Gaga crossed with Idi Amin. Or if that's too weird, just imagine Madonna. Her latest big hit, and this is true, is a duet with French actor Gerard Depardieu entitled Ebony and Completely Crazy.
You know, I find that this show is very popular in Uzbekistan, and I think that he's a wonderful dictator.
Yeah.
I don't think he's a brutal dictator. I think he's a great dictator. That was Peter Gross saying that.
Yeah. Carl, how did Ashu do on our quiz?
Ashu, you had three correct answers, so you win our prize. Congratulations.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Excuse-moi pour ce que je n'ai pu te garder.
Улицы пусты, город замолчал.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Roxanne Roberts has the lead, Peter. She has 4 points. Peter Gross has 3. Mo Rocca has 2.
Mo, you are in third place. Yes. You're up first. Mm-hmm. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. On Wednesday, President Obama revealed his proposal to reduce blank.
Gun violence.
Right. Foreign workers, including Americans, were taken hostage by a terror group in blank on Wednesday.
Algeria.
Right, because of fears over battery fires. This week, the FAA grounded Boeing's new blank.
Airplane, the 787?
Yes, called the Dreamliner. In an interview this week, an aging mobster with Detroit's mob said he knows where blank is buried.
Oh, the guy that Jack Nicholson played not very well, even though Jack Nicholson's usually so great. Jimmy Hoffa.
Yes.
Sorry.
Mo's brain at work.
After a foot chase, police in Florida apprehended a burglary suspect while he was blanking.
While he was selling his wares on the beach and saying, "Hey, everyone, I just stole these."
No, while he was hiding in a closet with a lampshade on his head. Subway restaurants found themselves in hot water this week after a New York Post investigation revealed that some foot-long subs are blank.
Shorter.
Right. In an official statement on Monday, the Palace revealed that blank's due date is in July.
Kate
Middleton. Yeah. A teacher in Ohio is suing her school district for discrimination, saying they are not respecting her lifelong fear of blank.
Is it a teacher is doing this?
It's a teacher in Ohio.
Is they're not respecting her lifelong fear of children.
Exactly right. Yes. It's unclear if Maria Walther Willard understood that one of the risks that come with being a teacher is an exposure to children. She says she's had a lifelong phobia of children. She says that she was fine with high schoolers, but then she was transferred to a middle school, and the younger children there were just too much for her. They terrified her with their general adorableness. And Ms. Walther Willard took early retirement, is moving on. She's excited to begin her new job as a ticket taker at Wiggles concerts. Carl, how did Mo do in our quiz?
Mo had 7 correct answers for 14 more points. He now has 16 points, and Mo has the lead.
Well done, Mo. All right. Peter, you're up next. Fill in the blank. On Monday, President Obama held the last blank of his first term.
Press conference.
Right. On Tuesday night, the House finally voted to approve a $50 billion emergency relief package for victims of blank.
Superstorm Sandy.
Yes. Safety concerns arose this week after a blank crashed into a crane over London.
A blank crashed into a helicopter?
Yes. Best known for his role as Mr. Drummond on the sitcom Blank. Conrad Bain died this week at age 89.
Different stroke.
Right. A sculptor in Siberia explained this week that he had made an 880-pound cobra sculpture out of cattle dung in order to blank.
Impress his girlfriend.
No, entertain the children during the long winter months. After undergoing treatment for bronchitis, former President Blank was released from the hospital on Monday.
George H.W. Bush.
Right. This year's Golden Globe ceremony, hosted by Blank and Blank, had the award show's highest ratings in years.
Amy Poehler and Tina Fey.
Yes, a Nebraska man who drove his car into a pizza joint blanked before emergency crews arrived.
Ordered a pizza?
Yes, indeed. The elderly man said his foot slipped on the gas pedal as he was parking at Valentino's Pizza, and since he was already inside, once the car stopped, and since it looked like it'd be a while before anybody showed up to help clean up, why not order the pizza? The man was actually halfway through his pizza when emergency workers arrived, cranky that he hadn't thought to order them anything. Carl, how did Peter do in our quiz?
Peter had a great round, 7 correct answers, 14 more points. He now has 17 points, and Peter Gross has taken the lead.
Well done. How many, then? I know Roxanne knows, but tell us, how many, then, does Roxanne need to win?
7 correct answers.
Oh, my goodness, Roxanne. That's a lot. Ready for it?
I'm going to try.
Here we go. French troops continued to fight Islamist rebels after landing in blank last Friday.
Mali.
Right. After it responded to a request to build a Death Star, the White House changed the numbers of signatures required for a response on blank.
On the White House petition
yes.
thing?
Yes. Yeah. In a dramatic unveiling on Wednesday, blank announced its new search feature.
Google.
Facebook. Pauline Friedman Phillips, best known for writing the blank advice column, died Thursday at age 94.
Dear Abby.
Yes. Police were called after a brawl broke out at a blank in Massachusetts.
A church confirmation.
No. Close, though, a baby shower. 30 years after her unexplained drowning, this week the L.A. coroner officially changed the cause of death for actress blank.
Natalie Wood.
Right. A Belgian woman says faulty GPS turned her 90-minute trip to the train station into a blank.
It was like a 9-hour trip. She ended up in Croatia or something.
Exactly right. Yeah. A 900-mile trip to Croatia. You'd think she would have noticed at some point, maybe when she stopped twice for gas or had a minor car accident or had to pull over to sleep because the sky had gradually become dark. But no, according to the woman, quote, I was distracted, so I kept driving. I saw all kinds of traffic signs, first in French, then German, and finally in Croatian. Then I looked behind me and I saw the earth receding into the distance. Now, she said that she was in Zagreb and she realized she wasn't in Belgium anymore.
That's it. Yeah, Siri had the wrong accent.
Exactly. Carl, did Roxanne do well enough to win?
Roxanne had 5 correct answers for 10 more points, giving her a total of 14 points. But with 17 points, Peter Gross is this week's champion.
Well done, Peter Gross. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists to predict what will be the next big confession after the big ones this week. But first, let me tell you that support for our Chicago shows is provided by Hyatt Hotels in downtown Chicago. Booking information is at Hyatt.com. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the National Association of Realtors, an advocate for homeownership. More at houselogic.com/homeownership. Carnegie Corporation of New York, a foundation created to do what Andrew Carnegie called real and permanent good, celebrating 100 years of philanthropy, and Esurance, an Allstate company, born online and offering tools and resources for drivers to make decisions about their car insurance at esurance.com. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, benevolent overlord. Philip Goedeker writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Assistant house manager is Tyler James Green. Our volunteer wrangler is Ray Teresi. Our intern is I Can See for Miles and Miles Dernboss. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Delarchik and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac here at Chase Bank. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced each week by Eva Waltover and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Lorna White. Our production coordinator is Robert Newhouse. Our senior producer, his name is Ian Chillag, and the executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is, as always, Mr. Michael Danforth. Now, panel, what will be the next big confession in the news? Peter Gross.
Oprah will admit that 15 years ago, she and Lance Armstrong conspired for him to engage in doping, deny it for years, win 7 tours de France, get publicly humiliated, seek redemption on her show, and save her lame spin-off network from total irrelevance.
What a scandal. Roxanne Roberts.
Jodie Foster will show up at the Academy Awards to confess that she, even she, didn't understand her Golden Globe speech, but yeah, she's gay.
And Mo Rocca.
After not coming clean with Oprah, Lance Armstrong will finally confess that the person who actually injected him with steroids was his best friend, a giant white rabbit.
Well, if we hear any of those confessions, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carol Castle. Thanks also to Peter Gross, Roxanne Roberts, and Mo Rocca. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. And we will see you next week. This is NPR.
You can find great music on the radio every hour of every day on All Classical 91.1, 91.1 FM, and online at 91.1.org.
This is 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org. It's 12 o'clock.